So nice, as always, to sit together. Today I want to play around a little bit in the fields of generosity and gratitude. And more precisely, how and when do we feel the presence of our own capacity to be in the flow of generosity? And how and when do we find ourselves outside of that flow? And sometimes it's very much internal. if we're really aversive or angry or grouchy, we usually aren't feeling so generous. But there are also sort of circumstances when external circumstances can feel more generous than others. And how then do we work with our own capacity to meet whatever external situation we're in, but we get to hold on to our own integrity and our own commitment around generosity. And an image that's often given about the practice, just to kind of go big, is if we think of a bridge spanning a river that has three posts, one near the shore, one that goes down to the bottom, and the other one near the shore. And those three bridge pillars are classically generosity, integrity, and mindfulness. So we start with generosity in that opening of the heart. It's really hard to do this practice if we're close-hearted and grouchy. More not in the mood way, but just when there's a clench and a holding on and a gripping and a grasping, it's hard, right? It's an unpleasant way to be, right? All states are impermanent. But the cultivation of can we be generous, which means what? I mean, so the Dana is a Pali word for generosity. And often for those of us who've sat retreats at Spirit Rock, we get the Dana talk. Teachers don't get paid. Please donate money. In the tradition of the monastics that would walk through the town on their alms rounds with their bowl, and the lay people, the villagers, the community town members would offer food to support the monastics. And very much embedded in that culture is this flow of generosity. The teachings, which are said to be priceless, are freely offered. And the community members rally and support the monastics. It happens in Asia. It happens in with our monastics communities in the U.S., although it's a little more challenging. And certainly Spirit Rock is based on that Dana system also. But I want to expand it beyond just how do we pay our teachers, to really hold it as how do we live it within ourselves. I want to share a snippet from a blessing from John O'Donohue. And the excerpt is from a larger blessing around the loss of a relationship. And I know those of you who want to join me in some of my day long on divorce, I clung to this when I was going through my divorce, which was terrible. So from John O'Donohue, try as best you can not to let the wire brush of doubt scrape from your heart all sense of yourself and your hesitant light. If you remain generous, time will come good again, and you will find yourself, and you'll find your feet again on fresh pastures of promise, where the air will be kind and blushed from the beginning. So beautiful, this invitation of, if you remain generous, time will come good again. And you will find your feet again on fresh pastures of promise, where the air will be kind and blessed with beginnings. And how do we, again, it feels such an invitation to hold on to ourselves, our own integrity, our own commitment to generosity. Again, those three pillars, mindfulness is woven in there also, an awareness practice that is ours and only ours within this form, right? Irrespective of the external circumstances. Time will come good again if you remain generous. And the different qualities of generosity, as I mentioned, sort of the way we hear about it most, here is this sort of, how do we pay our teachers? And again, how do we really claim this as, maybe for me, but for some of us, it can just be a real core value of how we want to move through the world. So I wanted to share from Book of Joy, the Desmond Tutu and Dalai Lama, and forgive me, you all know I quote from this book all the time. But they talk about the eight pillars of joy, four for the mind and four for the heart. Just for context, for the mind, it's perspective and humility, humor, and acceptance. And then for the heart, it's forgiveness, gratitude, compassion, and generosity. And I hold gratitude and generosity as very close cousins. And some say with the Brahma Viharas, of which are loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. So the American version has two more, which is the forgiveness and generosity or gratitude blended together. So I want to share a little bit from their teachings because I do love them so. Again, as sort of an expanding our sense, perhaps, of the role of generosity. Generosity is often a natural outgrowth of compassion, though the line between the two can be hard to distinguish. We don't need to wait until feelings of compassion arise before we choose to be generous. Generosity is often something that we learn to enjoy by doing. Joseph Goldstein, I think it's Joseph, not Sharon, talked about the practice that he undertook that whenever, Sharon might do this too, whenever there's an arising, like, oh, I want to give this, whatever it is, to do it. Without, then they're like, no, do they really deserve it? I don't think I want to give it away. All that chatter and doubt that could come in. And both of them, I think, have talked about following their practice of when the impulse arises to give freely and to see what happens. Generosity is so important in all the world's religions because it no doubt expresses a fundamental aspect of our interdependence and our need from one another. Generosity was so important for our survival that the reward centers of our brain light up as strongly when we give as when we receive, and sometimes even more so. Richard Davidson, who works out at the University of Wisconsin, has done amazing work with mindfulness and brain scans of deep meditation practitioners. Richard Davidson has identified generosity as one of the four fundamental brain circuits that map long-term well-being. Generous pro-social behavior seems to strengthen these relationships across cultures. Generosity is even associated with better health and longer life expectancy. Researchers David McClellan and Carol Kirschnett, just thinking about generosity, significantly increases the protective antibody salvatory immunoglobulin A, a protein used by the immune system. So it's good for our health. It is not just about the money we give. It's also about how we give our time. In the happiness literature, there's a great deal of research on the importance of having a sense of purpose, right? How do we find meaning and purpose? This is a Desmond Tutu, I think. We are fundamentally good. The aberration is not the good person. The aberration is the bad person. We are made for goodness. We are made for goodness. And when we get opportunities, we must respond with generosity. Bear with me. I want to read a little bit more. This part. So the Archbishop and the Dalai Lama described a special kind of generosity, the generosity of spirit. The quality they both have, perhaps more than any other, is the generosity of the spirit. They're big-hearted and magnanimous, tolerant, broad-minded, patient, forgiving, and kind. Maybe this generosity of spirit is the truest expression of spiritual development, of what the Archbishop has said it takes time to become. The Archbishop has used a beautiful phrase to describe this way of being in the world, becoming an oasis of peace, a pool of serenity that ripples out to all of those around us. When we have a generous spirit, we are easy to be with and fun to be with, right? And to think about the people in our lives that are generous, does this line up? Or when we are in our most generous selves, do we feel within ourselves that, that there's a lightness and a funness? We radiate happiness and our very company can bring joy to others. This no doubt goes hand in hand with the ability to be less self-centered, less self-regarding, more self-forgetful. And then we are less burdened by our self-agenda. We don't have anything to prove. We don't need to be seen in a particular way. We can have less pretension, more openness, more honesty. This naturally brings ease to those around us. As we have accepted ourselves, our vulnerabilities, our humanity, we can accept the humanities of others. This is a tall order, right? To be able to, just that last line, to accept ourselves, to accept others, to accept that we are fundamentally good. The capacity for good is right there. The aberration of is the bad actor. And sometimes it doesn't seem that way. But can we remember to come back to our own natural goodness, right? The divine abodes of loving kindness, compassion, joy, equanimity. That's our birthright. The 10 perfections of, let's see if I don't know if I can do well, but of generosity and integrity, wisdom, the way we use our energy, patience, truthfulness, equanimity, loving kindness. There's one more. Again, these are our birthrights. And we just forget that, as the mythology goes, when the Buddha was awakened and got up and taking in the world, and I can imagine it must have looked different. And he didn't really want to teach. He's thinking, no one's really going to get this. And one of the Brahmas from above said, no, 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 please teach. They have but little dust in their eyes. And this little dust of forgetfulness of our true nature. And that generosity is one of his core practices or capacities of the heart that's naturally there. And as mentioned in the book, that it's part of, because we are wired to be in community, we are independent beings and we need each other. And in so doing, this the natural arising of generosity supports us in being engaged with others. When we practice a generosity of spirit, we are in many ways practicing all the other pillars of joy. In generosity, there is a wider perspective in which we see our connection to all others. There is a humility that recognizes our place in the world and acknowledges that in another time, we could be the one in need, whether that need is material, emotional, or spiritual. Excuse me, there's a sense of humor and an ability to laugh at ourselves so we do not take ourselves too seriously. There's an acceptance of life in which we do not force life to be other than it is. That's a big one, right? Letting go of how we think things ought to be. There's forgiveness of others and a release of what might otherwise have been. Again, it's like this, putting down the fight. There is a gratitude for all that we have been given. And finally, we see others with a deep compassion and a desire to help those who are in need. And from this comes a generosity that is wise selfishness, a generosity that recognizes helping others is helping ourselves. As the Dalai Lama puts it, in fact, taking care of others, helping others, ultimately is the way to discover your own joy and to have happiness in life. And those are big concepts, right? And so we're going to be like, well, that's fine for those two. So then we bring it down kind of on the mundane level. So where and in what circumstances, as I mentioned before, do we find ourselves with ease in that flow of generosity? And where is it all jangly and complicated? There's an exercise coming, but first I want to read a few poems. Liquid Generosity. By Ray Lucero. The ocean offers her abundance. Are you jealous of the ocean's generosity? Why would she refuse to give this gift to anyone? Fish do not hold her sacred liquid in cups. They swim in huge liquid freedom. Be a fish. Swim in your boundless abundance. Share that abundance. Generosity is only limited by unwillingness. Be a fish. Swim in the boundless abundance. And share that abundance. The water element, and then the earth element from Rumi. The ground's generosity takes in our compost and grows beauty. Try to be more like ground. This from Alison Luderman. Consider the generosity of a one-year-old who has no words to exchange with you yet, and instead offers up her favorite jewel on blanket, her green rhinoceros, as big as she is. Her cloth doll with long blonde pigtails, her battered cardboard books swung open on their soggy pages, her limitless heart. If you were outdoors, she would hand you a dead beetle, a fistful of grass, a pebble, by way of introduction or just because. And if a moment later she wants it back, it would be for the joy of passing. Those simple symbols back and forth, freely offered, freely relinquished. This is me. Here is who I am. Oh. In the same way sun drapes a buttered scarf across your face, Rose opens herself to your glance, and rain shares its divine melancholy. The whole world keeps whispering or shouting to you, nibbling your ear like a neglected lover, while you worry over matters of finance, of relationship, important issues related to getting and spending, having and hoarding. Though you were once that baby, though you are still that world. Right? So sweet. So that limitless heart that, again, is our birthright. Regardless of the circumstances or the families or conditions into which we were born, it's distinct from the externalities. It's part of, again, our true nature, our own goodness, and a deep wisdom. And we can forget our circumstances or habits kind of get all in the way, that we kind of lose sight of, oh, it can be a different way. So I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. And just to first check in how this word generosity lands. And some of us may have a warm association with us, and some of us maybe not. And okay, good noticing. You don't need to have any particular way. And again, it's just bringing a curiosity to what's our relationship to generosity. And we may have the experience of being have spent a lot of time in the flow of generosity, and some of us may be like, no, I haven't. Okay. Again, we're just checking in with what's the kind of first or second level of reaction as in a relationship to generosity, and just noting, like, okay. Excellent. Okay. And then again, kind of with your eyes closed, to cast about maybe the last week or 10 days, by which I mean cast about. So going through the catalog of the last 7 or 10 days. To pick out the acts of generosity that you receive, and the mundane, it doesn't mean some check you got in the mail from somebody, but it's someone looked you in the eye, someone held a door open for you or let you go in front of them. Someone called you or sent a text. And again, this generosity can be the giving of someone's time, a generosity of their spirit, a generosity through some help in some way, a kindness. It may be someone you know well, it may be someone you don't know at all. But allowing the mind to orient towards acts of generosity that we have been the beneficiaries of, you know, the sun draping her buttery scarf across your face, the rain helping drought-ridden areas of the West, the wind that can cool us, the generosity of having parts of our bodies work. Great. And just see what comes. If there's a struggle, or if many things come, that line about what the mind, that which the mind inclines towards, that which the mind ponders. So inclines the mind. And if we allow the mind to ponder, to frequently ponder acts of generosity, we begin to orient that way. So kind of, maybe it's a little bit more scanning about the last week or 2 weeks for acts that we have received
acts of generosity. From the most mundane, we are setting a low bar here. It's sort of almost like with our magnifying glass looking for acts of generosity that we have been recipients of from the natural world, from humans, from our own bodies. And then to shift perspective of the last week or 10 days, 2 weeks, how have we been generous to others? And again, like this is a very wide definition of generosity. Generosity of time, our thoughtfulness, our own goodness. We don't know the ways in which we touch others, how much a simple smile or a hello or a text or a phone call or a message can mean to people. So again, with this magnifying glass, looking for ways, myriad of ways, I'm sure, that we have been generous to ourselves or to others in our life. So we are pondering this, our own generosity, to incline the mind, to orient towards looking for times when we've been in this flow of generosity of giving and receiving. Consider the generosity of the one-year-old with a limitless heart. To be in the flow of giving and receiving. And just notice what comes up. And if there's a judging component that comes in, we can just say, not now. We're just being curious what happens when we allow the mind to linger down our own acts of generosity, again, towards ourselves, towards those we love, towards strangers, to the earth, to our neighborhood. And to check in, is there a felt sensation that comes or arises as we are inclining the mind and pondering upon the flow of generosity, our own and that of others? How's the heart? How's the mind? That's the belly. When we give ourselves permission to be in this flow of generosity, I have a willingness to give, I have a willingness to receive, which is not always easy for some of us, that second part. What happens? Happens to the shoulders, the jaw, the belly, the chest, the heart. Or if we make the declaration, commitment to be in the flow of generosity, of giving and receiving, notice what happens. Is there a clenching? Like, ooh, maybe not. Okay. Exhale. Just being curious. And if we were to set an intention or aspiration about our relationship to generosity, to this flow of giving and receiving, what might that be? And then can you say it again to yourself and see how the body responds? As we name this intention or aspiration, about moving in the world in a particular way, a particular expression of our own generosity of spirit. I'm going to stop here. And I thank you very much for the kindness of your attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.